It's my belief that the fight that we really need to gear up for is on the national level, and with the changes on the national level and really the direction that many feel that Pacifica, or at least some of the board members of Pacifica, are trying to go in. And I would further urge listeners to help heal this situation on the local level and help stabilize it so that this station can go forward and we don't leave ourselves open to other people coming in and managing our station. Let's give people a chance here. So we have in the studio with us Ralph Engelman. He is the former chair of the local board. He teaches journalism at Long Island University in Brooklyn and has written a book called Public Radio and Television in America, A Political History. And has, I understand, also, Ralph, been doing research into the changes on the Pacifica National Board and some of the new board members.
Right. Let me first say that...
And welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here. What is currently happening is not just another Pacifica crisis. I think past crises, and there have been plenty of them, all took place within a kind of shared, broad framework of agreement about the mission of Pacifica. But for the last year, year and a half, a board leadership has emerged that really, to my mind, the mind of many others, has real, is at odds with the historic mission of Pacifica as a truly alternate, independent institution and source of news, public affairs, and culture. And this, it seems to me, is the problem. And what the only reference I'll make really right now to the problems at BAI is that it seems to me that the national board leadership is really exploiting divisions that are inevitable in any Pacifica station, divisions about programming, airtime, and the like, limited resources, and exploiting it for their own ends, which is to sort of consolidate their authority and change the culture of Pacifica.
Mm-hmm. We also, and I want to have you go into that in just a moment, about who some of the new board members on the board are and how they got there, you know, and how that intersected with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and why that might have influenced Pacifica, since only 15% of Pacifica's funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But I also would like to introduce our other guest on the phone, Tomas Moran. And Tomas has been on the national board since October of 99 and is a housing activist, grassroots activist out of Palo Alto, California. And we're speaking to him from there. And Tomas, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, and thank you very much. Welcome to Where We Live.
I'm very glad to be on BAI there.
Okay, and let me just, let's just for purposes of organization, Ralph, why don't we begin with you, just to bring the listeners up to speed on, you know, what's been happening on the national level and why it's so important. And then, Tomas, I'd like you to then pick up, and as a national board member who, you know, agrees with the original and initial and true mission of Pacifica, you know, from your perspective, what's going on.
Okay. Now, some people have made reference or characterized the attack from the national board as a right-wing offensive, and I don't think that's the case. I think the board, again, the majority, the leadership on the board, represents a group of what you might call corporate liberals or neoliberals and Clinton liberals, who, again, are at odds with what Pacifica historically has done. Now, we know at National Public Radio for years, the leadership has come from the ranks of government. Kevin Coase, the current president of NPR, his history is with United States Information Agency, Radio Marti, Radio Free Europe, as is his assistant, you know.
And who is this?
Kevin Coase and his assistant, Kenneth Stern. And the same can be said of the CPB leadership itself. Robert Coonrod and his professor, Richard Carlson, also came out of the USIA. Now, we have, as the former chair of the board and still the eminence grise and the power behind the throne, Mary Frances Berry, is a Clinton-Gore Democrat, comes out of the Democratic Leadership Council that, you know, that moved the Democratic Party to the center. She is a Washington insider, and under her leadership, of course, the offices of Pacific will move to Washington, and then she surrounded herself with people, some people already on the board and others that she brought in, like, for example, John Murdoch. There's been a lot of talk about him, who works for the law firm of Epstein, Becker, and Green, others like Bert Lee is another one. What is he, former co-owner of the Denver Nuggets, served on the board of Reebok, a kind of boom and bust millionaire who is riding high one minute, and he flipped a radio station in Boston, CBS, affiliate CBS, that Channel 7, which local people had struggled for a long time to get a minority-controlled network station there.
Explain to the listeners what you mean by flipped.
Well, that came in after the long struggle to get a network television station, and sold it quickly for a profit, leaving the community high and dry. And so he is an entrepreneur, a wheeler dealer, a person who trades in licenses. And keep in mind that another key board member, Michael Palmer, from Houston, who works for CB Richard Ellis, which is maybe the largest real estate company in the world, 250 offices, 400 countries, that he was the one who accidentally sent an email to Mary Frances Berry, that to others, indicating that his interest and his exploring the possibility of selling the licenses for either KPFA or WBAI, this was some time ago, and indicating that probably BAI would be a better bet. So you have, you know, a group, and then other names have been floated. One of them that whose resume was circulated and insufficiently and not early enough, and the minority on the opposition on the board was able to block it, but it's still indicative. Francisco Riccioli, who's a vice president at Citibank in private investment, specializes in Europe, the Middle East, Africa. Now, how would a person like this, for example, respond or view the kind of programming the Pacific has been doing on globalization, on the Battle of Seattle? When you look at the background of these kinds of board members, you understand why a certain kind of purge has been taking place in Pacifica, of people like Nicole Sawaya, people like Dan Coughlin, and others. And it is not just a question of a purge of individuals, but it is an attack on Pacifica's unique tradition of sort of engaged journalism. So we could talk more about that, but in a rough overview, gives you an idea of who these people are. And Ken Ford is a lobbyist for the National Home Builders Association. The list goes on and on. And it's a little hard. I did attend a board meeting in Washington in February of 2000. And it's a little hard to describe the atmosphere there and the way in which Mary Frances Berry has developed a group of loyalists around her. Bert Lee, before he was even put on the board, was attending meetings and attacking some of the dissidents on the board. Other board members were affirming their willingness to take a bullet for her. There's a very funny, you know, dynamic. It's personal loyalty as well as a kind of ideological orientation or reorientation has taken place. And because of this, and this is something, Sal, that maybe we want to come back to later, there have been a series of actually three major lawsuits questioning the practices of the National Board.
Lawsuits brought by whom?
One brought by the local advisory boards of Pacifica. A second is a listener suit. And the third is, interestingly enough, a director suit brought by members of the Pacifica board, national board, who, because their views are not, they are not lockstep with the leadership, have been excluded from meetings and participation in decision-making.
What is important to know is how did, of course, Mary Frances Berry is no longer the chair of the national board, nor is she on the board anymore, serves in an advisory capacity. John Murdoch, I've heard Bessie Walsh, the executive director of Pacifica, say that Murdoch only works for Epstein, Becker, and Green. He doesn't participate in any of the union-busting cases or anything like that. And, you know, so as I said to you before, you know, when we spoke, you know, perhaps we can shed some light on that.
Well, it's true that one of the things that I have, it's on the webpage, that one of the things they specialize, it's a very large firm, is helping companies maintain a so-called union-free environment. John Murdoch's specialty is in the healthcare area, and he does other unsavory business, as far as I can tell, including one of the things that is mentioned is criminal defense of healthcare providers. In other words, providing legal support for example, HMOs that may be sued for discrimination or not providing proper services. And we're all familiar with all the problems that HMOs represent.
Mm-hmm. And let's bring you, Tomas, into this conversation. Again, this is Tomas Moran. He's been a member of the National Board since October of 1999. And Tomas, how many members are on the National Board, and is there a real philosophical difference, and what is the majority?
Well, currently there are 18 members on the board, although the number has fluctuated. Historically, it had only been 15 members until there was a surge that was brought in by Mary Frances Berry in February, as a matter of fact, when five members were put in a manner that went historically over the number that that had been on the board for a long time. I have to tell you that the philosophy and stuff is only evident through actions and sort of blind support of policies that are being kind of rammed through, because we're not having the kind of debate at the board level that we should be having of how to further the mission of Pacifica, unfortunately. One of the things that I think that is important for the listeners to understand and to sort of not, as you said earlier, Sally, maybe not get distracted by local problems that have been historically divisive within individual stations, is looking at the board leadership as having what I would call the burden of proof. I mean, in the legal system, there's a concept of burden of proof, and I think that the board leadership should have the burden of proof to the listeners of a listener-sponsored institution that it is actively upholding the mission of that organization. So I and the other board members should be held accountable and should have the burden of proof of behaving in a way that demonstrates to the listeners our commitment to that mission. And therefore, it is not up to the listeners to completely demonstrate that we are acting against it, but it should be our active expectation all along that we demonstrate to the listeners that we understand where Pacifica should be in terms of its commitment to voices that are not otherwise heard on the airwaves, and to a commitment to a participation and a dialogue with the listener that is true to the mission of the original founding of Pacifica. And I have been very disappointed in my year and a quarter, a year and a couple of months on the board, in that the actions that we've taken and the actions within the board meetings, as Ralph was talking about, have lacked that kind of accountability. We don't seem to communicate within the board. For example, I have received no notification of reasons for the actions that were taken in New York at this point. Now, I understand, and I was listening to your previous show on the web, and people can say legitimately, look, there's no, there might be personnel reasons why you don't disclose reasons for dismissal. Well, as board members, we are privy to personnel matters, and we can have discussions as to why an action such so dramatic as coming in at midnight on a weekend, on a holiday weekend, and taking this kind of action. Board members should have been notified. There's been silence within the board, and that kind of lack of process.
But doesn't the board have to authorize such a move?
Well, you would think so, Sally, and I think that that's what some of us that are the so-called dissidents, and I kind of hate that term. I see myself as a person that's upholding the mission of this organization and not dissident at all. Maybe the majority is the majority that's not doing that. You would think that the board would have to be having those discussions. And, you know, focusing on the background of the board members is educational, but it fails to sort of ask the question, regardless of what possible connections with, you know, real estate firm or what have you that you have, are you behaving actively in a way that's furthering the mission of Pacifica? And how are you demonstrating that by your behavior and your conduct and the kind of commitment that you have to a process that is honorable by our way of thinking? We are in our own programming, we're seeking justice. Many of us are in our own activist lives looking for a more just way to treat each other, and I think that it is incumbent of us to demonstrate that kind of commitment to the listeners by behaving in a way that's accountable. And if we focus on that and then the listeners demand from us on the board that kind of behavior, it will be a great impulse to having the board have to put forth in front of the listeners a reason for their actions and to not hide behind you know, people who are acting as station manager, as executive director, and say, well, gosh, it's them. You know, we're ultimately responsible for this. Some of us who are so-called dissidents have called for an emergency board meeting ever since this action occurred at BAI. And we have on past actions. We were very disturbed by some of the problems with Amy Goodman and her show, and we again asked for an emergency board meeting. We've asked for accountability in terms of the grievance process, and there's been really no forthcoming communication, and I think the listener needs to understand that within an organization, when within your people who are legitimately on the board, who are privy to confidential information, you have that kind of lack of process that Ralph was also witnessing just sitting in a board meeting. That is very disturbing and is very hard to, I would think impossible to demonstrate from our perspective that we're upholding the mission when we don't have process accountability.
The question, and Tomas, this is Safi Bukhari. You asked for an emergency meeting. No, did you get an emergency meeting?
It's even worse than that. We haven't gotten a response, literally, you know. So I try to communicate with the board chair. I hear nothing back. Silence.
It's hard for me to visualize a board of directors does not. What kind of structure allows certain members of the board to do something without the accountability to the rest? And is there a legal recourse that you can have internally in order to get such an emergency meeting?
Well, you know, there are, as Ralph mentioned before, some legal efforts on various different kind of plaintiff sides that are trying to get their perspective of accountability. The problem with a lot of these things is that they take time. I think pressure on a political nature and on a nature of listeners who have been longtime supporters and have strong recognition within the community or even just regular listeners. I've received over, you know, close to 4,000 emails since the October issues with Amy Goodman from listeners all over the country and the world that see behavior that is very concerning to them, but that does not translate into action by the board. The structure that's there does not permit this kind of behavior, and we believe that it's not anything structural. It's just the people who are holding on to the majority say you need a majority number to call a meeting, and just because you ask for a meeting, we're not going to grant it. So we are in the very strange situation of being incommunicado from the executive director and virtually from the small group with its loyalists that are running situations on
the board. So in effect, while they are here saying there is a quote unquote coup at WBAI, the real coup is happening on the national board.
Well, I think listeners can draw their own conclusions. I think it's what I'm here telling you is some of the facts of what's occurring at the board level, and I think Sally's point early on, which is in terms of it's important to look at local issues and problems, but I know historically those have always been present in Pacifica, and understanding that there's something structurally at the leadership at the top centrally that is creating this atmosphere in a much more dramatic way than I've ever known to happen historically within Pacifica.
It raises the issue question in my mind when we talk about the mission of Pacifica. Is the mission of Pacifica still the mission that it was when it was founded?
I think at the programmer level, we, most of our programmers and producers, by the nature of what they're putting on the air, the coverage of political prisoners, the coverage of housing crisis in this country, the health crisis in this country, and so forth, are demonstrating that we are trying to put on programming that is committed to bringing voice of the voiceless into the airwaves. Is that the vision of what Pacifica should be doing at the level of the board? I don't hear that discussion. I haven't heard that discussion happening within the board. And again, the actions and the type of behavior against some of the very same programmers and grassroots kind of support for the stations and would suggest to me that we are not focusing on that historic mission at this point.
Ralph, I want you I know you have an answer to that also, and then let me just say that we have, two more topics to talk about. It's an hour squeezes short, so unfortunately we can't continue so long. So if you would just respond to Safi's question, and then I would just like both of you very, very, very briefly just to, give your impressions about, how this can be fought. And, regardless of how this plays out here, on the local level, needless to say, there's a union grievance about Sharan Harper's job, and that will go through its process. And, in terms of negotiations with Bernard, I don't know what is going on with that, since Bernard said on the air last Friday that he wouldn't come back to this station in any capacity as long as Utrecht was here. And of course, people have to decide for themselves what Utrecht's history is, what her track record is, and whether or not, they want to give it a shot. Personally, I'm hoping that this station is going to run well, and I'm going to give it a shot.
Well, I think the key question has been posed. And really what is happening is there is a battle over the soul of Pacifica and the future of Pacifica. And I think that Pacifica is very much at risk. The individual stations are very much at risk. And it's very important that those who, the listeners, members of the staff, everyone from the extended Pacifica family who believes in its mission, rally to address this threat. And I think that
how? That's the point.
Well, I think there are many different ways in which people can do it. Members of the staff must set aside their differences, whether they're ideological, personal, or whatever. to keep their eye on the ball, not take advantage of, you know, let's say, situations that might be profitable in terms of getting some more airtime or let's say, fighting, you know, settling scores and all the rest. I think the lawsuits are only one, but one important way in which people are trying to address this issue, and they're doing so. Great attempts were made to reach out to the current leadership, to open up a kind of discourse and dialogue and debate. And as Tomas has suggested, phone calls don't get answered, people don't get rebuffed. The whole style of this leadership is one really of a kind of almost hostile takeover. And for this reason, I think that people, a variety of people, have decided to go the legal route. And I should mention that the Carol Spooner, a person who is leading the listeners' lawsuit, will be speaking this Friday, January 5th at 6 o'clock at 75 Varick Street. Her suit, just to mention that one, was brought before the Attorney General of California, who, in his capacity as overseer of charitable trusts and organizations like Pacifica Chartered in California, he does not have to accept this suit, a suit such as this, but he did, feeling that it raised substantial issues. And it addresses many of the problems that Tomas has talked about. Its remedies include removal of most of the board members. It also seeks a bylaw amendment for election of board members, so forth and so on. The director's lawsuit has important additional aspects to it. I should also say, for listeners who are concerned, there is a way. Vanguard Fund in California, a nonprofit foundation, is accepting money. It's tax-free money that will be distributed equally between the three lawsuits. And I'll just give the address. It's 383 Rhode Island Street, San Francisco, California, 94103.
Ralph Engelman, you've always been a friend of this station, and thank you very, very much for bringing your expertise here today. And Tomas,
just briefly, I think that not to add to anything that Ralph said, basically what I would urge to listeners is to understand that if they've loved the AI, if they've loved the kind of connection to the community and to the activism that it brings to your life, it is important that you plug yourself into some mechanism to stay informed and active around this matter. Public pressure helps in a number of ways, by alerting the political structure of the state, by alerting the people on the board that they're being held accountable, and in a respectful but honest way, raising their voices to say that they will not tolerate this institution to be usurped, to take its mission and its assets, really, the assets of five very, very strong signals in five large metropolitan areas of this country, to be taken for whatever different mission. I mean, people can talk about other valuable things to do with it, but the point is that this station is committed to having the voice of the voiceless and represented in the airwaves, and that's such a valuable mission, and it is not going to be usurped. And I think plugging yourself into somebody, staying informed about this, and listening to the people that are pointing out that structurally there is a issue at the leadership at this point, and making sure that we at the board level know that you are out there looking at us.
And can people reach the progressive members of the board, and very briefly, how?
They can. Our names are all over the internet in most of the sites. There's a couple of members there on the national board that have been working very diligently at documenting and at working with us members here in California also to document the matters that we've been talking about tonight. Leslie Kagan and Beth Lyons have been, I know, having meetings with the listeners in New York. contact us, continue to send the emails, but most importantly, stay plugged in through one of the local organizing groups. The power of people who don't have big money and big power with them is always being in our numbers and our ability to, in a decentralized but a cooperative way, move against the large corporate power.
And on that note, Tomas Moren, thank you so much for being on today.
Take care.